I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
Yeah, let's kick off with this question from John. I'm sure it's a question that a lot of people would want to hear you answer. Can you see Arne Slot going to Liverpool, and will he be a success? Andy, do you want to kick that one off? Because Arne Slot has been talked about in terms of the upcoming vacant Liverpool coaching job.
Yeah, and it appears he's jumped to the front of the queue, and it's a really interesting choice. I mean, Ruben Amorim, a coach who I really highly rate, who I suspect we'll maybe come to in a bit, is someone who was in the mix as well, and it seems Slot has overtaken him. But I think there's a lot to recommend Arne Slot, and we talked in the main OTC yesterday about that idea of bringing philosophy to keep you competitive, to trust the process, and that will eventually get you the results, which I think is the right way to approach things. I think, you know, if you're just relying on the individual qualities of players, that's not a great idea. And I think especially the way that Liverpool have started to rebuild under Jurgen Klopp, that idea of sticking with that philosophy of young players, and in Arne Slot's case, a particular type of football, a particular type of aggressive, fast football based by around developing good young players is important. If we go back with Slot, you know, it's no surprise to see him linked with a big job in the Premier League, because of course he could have come to the Premier League last summer. Spurs were really interested in him, and he chose to stay with Feyenoord. Now, I guess there were probably two reasons for this. One, because he felt he hadn't quite finished the job at Feyenoord. He wanted to take them into the Champions League, having won the Eredivisie. And the second part of that is probably because he's a smart man. He saw what was coming at Ajax, and he thought, you know what, we can probably go and repeat again. Obviously, Peter Bosz and the job he's done at PSV is absolutely unprecedented, because if you look at Feyenoord's record in the Eredivisie this season, it wins you the league most seasons. The only reason they're not winning the league this season is because PSV have been absolutely outstanding under Peter Bosz. But if we're talking about results can never be guaranteed, and process is important, you're still getting that with Arne Slot. You know, he's reconstituted a really good team despite losing Orkan Kukcu, one of his best players in the summer, to Benfica, a man who pulled all the strings in that number 10 role. And I think that Liverpool always treat players as if they have a point where you have to let them go. And, you know, it's happened to, it happened with Coutinho, it happened with Mane, maybe it will happen with Salah in the near future. They don't run like Manchester City. They have to think about developing what they've got, developing players that they bring in, rather than necessarily maxing themselves out at the top of the market. And all of those things, if you look at how, say, Santi Jimenez is developed under Slot, I think all those things make him appealing, and that he wants to play that aggressive front football, front foot football that Liverpool and their fans want to see. Immediately, he'll have to hit the ground running. But if you look at other coaches that hadn't had that chance in the Premier League before, like Ange Postecoglou, like Roberto De Zerbi, I think it's more about the ideas you've got rather than if you're, you know, Premier League tried and tested necessarily.
Yeah, Nicky, I can see that you're itching to jump in there. What I was going to say just before, just points that Andy made there towards the end of that conversation. Fair enough, you can compare Arne Slot to maybe Ange Postecoglou in the Premier League, but the difference is that Arne Slot is walking into some big shoes there, amongst other things. And like Andy says, you've got to hit the ground running. Can you see him in the Premier League and managing Liverpool of all teams?
Yeah, it's certainly a different scale of challenge, stepping into Liverpool and stepping into Brighton. Said with no disrespect for Brighton, it's where I live, as you guys know, and a great football club, and De Zerbi does a fantastic job there. But I think that you're, at Liverpool, you're walking into a club where you're expected right away to compete for the league title, even if you're not necessarily expected to win it. You're expected to be in that conversation. You're expected to go into the Champions League, believing that you can compete there as well. It's a big step up. And I think that whatever way you spin it, there's going to be a significant amount of unknown if this is indeed the appointment. Slot is, without question, someone who's overachieved where he's been in his career. It's interesting listening to or going back and reading some of the things that he said during some of those steps in his career. When he was at Alkmaar, he at one point commented that he basically said, I don't think I have the presumption to say that I can make individual players get better. What I think I can do is create systems that allow players to express themselves as best they can. And I think that's a really, I don't know, I find that an intriguing framing, because I think there absolutely are plenty of managers who would say, yes, it's part of my job to help a player to get better individually. And he sort of resisted that individual narrative for an idea of being able to create I suppose symphonies on the pitch that work, and you can bring that forward and look at this feud he had, mini feud with Jose Mourinho. I think calling it a feud is massively overstating it, but
no, pump it up.
but because they ran into each other 3 years in a row in Europe, they ran into each other, Feyenoord and Roma, in the Europa Conference League. That happened in the Europa League the last two seasons. Every time in the end, Roma came out on top. But there was this... But having said that, Roma came out on top in very narrow results, and where you would say Feyenoord with less financial resources were at times more impressive. But there was this idea put forward that Mourinho had been having a go at him in the tunnel because Slot said, well, what Mourinho does is really fascinating, but I really prefer to watch Man City and Napoli. And I think that speaks to who he is as a manager, the kind of football he enjoys, the fact that I think those aren't situations chosen by chance. If you look at Spalletti at Napoli, you look at Pep Guardiola at Man City, they are very much system coaches who are trying to do something tactically. And again, going back to what the quote I said before, that are trying to create systems that allow their players to thrive more than they are necessarily focusing on individual man management. It's all about creating a structure in which everyone knows what they're doing and which the team all knows how to play off each other. So I think it's definitely some insight there into what sort of manager he is. Having said that, just to play down the feud angle, there was another thing he said after that, where all of that, which is now being picked up in the English press, but there was a separate quote from Slot where he talks about how important it is for him to listen to other coaches and when they talk about their philosophy, and saying that he heard Mourinho say, you have to recognise that when you're driving a functional basic car and your opponent's driving a Ferrari, you're not going to win the race. You've got to throw some sand in their engine. And I think that idea that he, even if he doesn't necessarily think like Mourinho, he's willing to listen to him. It indicates who Slot is. Slot is a coach who I think is open to learning and to seeing different ways of doing things.
Lil Nas X beat the Ferrari with a horse, so you never know. But Andy, well, I don't know if it was a Ferrari, but he beat it. Andy, though, let's be honest. Arne Slot isn't he's not regarded as a top coach in Europe, though, is he? Even Jamie Carragher, needs no introduction, obviously, said this was indicative of the lack of top managers that there are in Europe, that Liverpool should be considering Arne Slot.
I don't think that's fair. I think there's the big name coach and there's the right coach. And we know which Liverpool are going to try and go for. The biggest name coach on the market is probably Antonio Conte. Should Liverpool go for him? Absolutely not. He doesn't he doesn't fit their ideas or their philosophy. You know,
not Jose, Andy. Not Jose.
Yeah, well, there's another one. I mean, look, we all love the narrative, but I think, like I said, it's about the process as much as anything else, I think. And I think you have to recognise that. And Liverpool's way is to get players or coaches of quality and help them develop. It's not about going and, you know, getting the biggest name in the market. That's just not the way they do things. And why should they change that?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This next question from Jake is a subject that we've discussed previously on our podcast, and, well, it's getting inching closer to you know, really happening at some point or other. Jake says, I read that Javier Tebas, who's the president of La Liga, wants La Liga matches to be played in the States by the 25-26 season, so a couple of seasons away. What is the market and demand like overseas for La Liga, Serie A and the Bundesliga, etc., compared to the Premier League? Which seems to me to be a really fair question. Nikki, do you fancy going for that first?
I think it's definitely not as simple as saying what is the market like for X league in Y country. I think if you want to approach this question honestly, the real truth is when with different countries abroad, with different levels of intensity, what people very often will turn out to see and pay money to see is certain big clubs from those countries. And I think this is part of the complication of this picture. When you look at even Italy's Supercoppa played, they turned it into a semi-final and final for the first time this year and played in Riyadh. There was, I think, a certain amount of disappointment and indeed some incredibly messy branding in which teams that weren't even involved were put on posters. There was a certain amount of disappointment that you had clubs like Lazio there, who, as brilliant as their results were under Maurizio Sarri, are not the same draw as a club like Juventus internationally. And those things actually are at the heart of this question. Football has changed a huge amount in my lifetime. And I think now more than ever, it's about brands. The brands are clubs and brands are also individual players. I think individual player brands are stronger than they've ever been. And yes, football officials look to other sports like the NFL that has very successfully expanded its schedule and started including more international games. I think this will happen sooner or later. And the question of what is the market in demand for, I think you have to pick a country and pick a club or pick a player to answer that. Honestly, I think with the best will in the world, there is not the same market to watch Empoli against Verona in New York as there would be to watch a Milan derby, for instance.
Yeah, and I think really Tebas kind of answers the question, doesn't he? Like, if there was sufficient demand already and it was all working commercially, then La Liga wouldn't be so aggressive in trying to get this game out there. The fact is, it wants to try and catch up with the Premier League. It wants to try and make up some of that space. And I think you look at the way the Bundesliga has marketed itself has been quite clever and interesting in recent years as well. Now, obviously, the game abroad could never happen for the Bundesliga because the fans simply would not accept it. You know, the whole of German football would implode. But they've known that for years. And at the same time, Dortmund and Bayern, who are seen as big rivals domestically, or rivals at least domestically, have worked together for common interests in terms of putting themselves abroad for tours. They've both played a lot of games in the States. Bayern have got an office in New York City and have done for a number of years now. So I think really the question is answered by the level of desperation there is to get the product out there. Mm-hmm. And Spain is certainly the most aggressive in doing that. Now, in terms of Serie A, obviously they've had Supercoppas abroad for, 20 years now? So that and now they've expanded that in partnership with Saudi Arabia. That's something that Spain have done, expanded their Supercopa as well. So look, I think it shows that they need to find new ways of revenue and ways to stimulate the demand rather than necessarily meeting a demand that's there. Now, whether, as Nicky says, this is the right way to do it, I think is a different question. So whether we think that's morally right, whether a league competition, a team should have to give up home games and fans should be deprived of home games and all that sort of stuff, that's a different question. I think the question really is about whether this will work commercially. And you know what? I don't think we can know until it happens, but we're going to find out pretty quick.
But off the back of what Nicky says, it would seem the question is also asking which are the teams that would be commercially viable in the United States from these leagues. La Liga, for example, I would assume would be Real Madrid and Barcelona. Any others?
But they're not going to get a Clasico there straight off. I mean, it's not going to happen. So if you think the game that was originally floated for Miami before FIFA put the block on it was Barcelona versus Girona. That was going to be played in Miami. So that kind of half and half approach is going to work.
Tebas has not given us the concrete details of exactly how he sees it working yet. Just to say it, in Italy, this conversation has not really progressed that far, but where it has been talked about, the president of Lega Serie A said, we've thought about doing a whole round overseas. So that would mean taking a whole round of games and playing them overseas, which is back to the English 39th game idea. I think it's logistically sounds like a nightmare. I think that again, people need to think hard about how it's going to look when you have in any of these leagues, because I don't think this is exclusive to any of them. I think you could go and look at teams that are in the bottom half of the table in Italy, Spain, Germany, or indeed England, and think about how it's going to look if you have these big international stadiums with 10,000 fans in them or fewer, which will happen for some teams. So there is a really thorny issue here where, to bring it back to what I was saying before, there is huge international appetite for events, for big games, for exciting occasions. Is there huge international appetite for 13th against 15th in the Bundesliga? I'm sceptical, personally.
Nikki, bearing in mind what Andy just said about German fans' attitude, is there going to be resistance in Spain and Italy?
I can't predict with certainty, but my feeling is no. And when you look at the Super League, when it was first announced, the level of resistance we saw in England compared to the responses we got in Italy and Spain, it seemed like they were very drastically different. And I think speaking for certainly Italian fans, there's no lack of willingness amongst ultras to point out the hypocrisy and to criticise the powers that be in football. But it almost always feels like it comes with an accompanying feeling that, but they're going to do it anyway. There's this feeling that the authorities are always going to do what they're going to do. And yes, we'll make our snarky banners and we'll protest about it. But because we don't really expect that we'll ever be listened to, there won't be some concerted campaign in a way that could actually affect change.
Yeah, and I think it's the same, but more in Spain, if we're being completely honest. I think fans are used to being walked all over there. And, you know, I think part of it is due to the fact that away fans don't travel as much, generally speaking. Of course, there are exceptions to that. You know, Betis can get formidable crowds on the road now and then. But generally speaking, there aren't huge away crowds, which I think makes a difference as well. And, you know, I think you saw it with the Super League. You can see it with the fact that Real Madrid and Barcelona are the two that have stayed in it until the bitter end. I think is indicative of how it is, really. And, you know, like in the past, like the La Liga have been allowed to get away with, like, 11 p.m. Sunday night kickoffs. I remember Radamel Falcao when he was playing for Atletico saying, "Well, it's past my bedtime, but what can you do?"
Here's a great question on Italian football for you, Nikki, from Peter. What would Atalanta rather win, the Coppa Italia or the Europa League?
So, on the surface, I think you could look at this and go immediately, well, the Europa League would be the bigger draw. It guarantees them Champions League access next season. And probably that is the correct answer. But all through this season, really from quite early in this season, Gianpiero Gasperini, the Atalanta manager, has been saying, my priority, my number one target is the Coppa Italia. And the word he's been using, fattibile, is it's doable. And he's been saying that again since certainly the start of this calendar year, perhaps before. And that's aided by the fact that we've seen some of the bigger teams fall out of the Coppa Italia early on. Inter going out is certainly a moment, because as we were talking about on the main show this week, Simone Inzaghi was king of the cup. So as long as Inter were in it and being brilliant, then that's an obstacle that teams would have found it hard to get past. But yeah, Gasperini has been consistently month after month saying, I want the Coppa Italia. That's the thing. And for him, I think there's definitely this real desire to crown what has been an extraordinary chapter in Atlanta's history that he's overseen with something concrete, with a trophy, with something you can take home and go, right, we've got this. And I think for that reason, the Coppa Italia has felt very tangible and present. But I think right up until they knocked out Liverpool, the Europa League didn't. And now they've knocked out Liverpool, I think maybe people are looking going, well, can't we win the Europa League? Is it really that impossible? Because we've beaten the team that was supposed to be the best one left in it. We know we're capable at least of playing Roma if we were to face them in the final, which is a possibility. So why shouldn't we try to win it? So perhaps the real answer is both. But I do think if you listen to Gasperini, he's talked about the Coppa Italia all year as being his priority and the one he wants to win.
And here's a decent Bundesliga question for you, Andy, from Lucas. How will hiring Lars Ricken as sporting executive at Dortmund, how will that help the team? What's his first task?
I think that's a really good question. There is no first task. There is a lot of tasks. Hans-Joachim Watzke is going to leave in 2025. So eventually Ricken will take over from him. And it's a total reshuffle at the top of the club, because Sebastian Kehl has been the sporting director. Now, Sven Mislintat has come back as the technical director is the title. But if you've got Lars Ricken, who's come up from being the head of the Dortmund Youth Academy for a long time, to go above Kale, and then you've got Mislintat dealing with the transfers, if you're Sebastian Kale, I think you're probably thinking, am I completely neutered here? What am I doing? You know, he had hoped to take over from Vatska, and he'd been public about that, and that's not going to happen, it looks like. So maybe the first thing is him moving. I think the demarcation of responsibilities is important. And I think from a Ricken perspective, you know, Dortmund have been really hampered by Corona losses, but they've also been hampered by a lack of strategy over the last couple of years. And there's been no real transfer strategy, and that's shown on the pitch. Now, where maybe Ricken can help with this is by knowing the academy, by knowing the young players that are coming through. And, of course, Paris Brunet is one of those who... If they can sort out various contractual issues with him, they will probably hope to get into the first team. The last real star from the academy, Youssoufa Moukoko, has not quite become the first team superstar that they hoped he would. So I think one of the bigger questions as well is Mislintat, because, of course, he was very important for Dortmund the first time, did some good work at Stuttgart. Let's be honest, his time at Ajax was just a disaster. And Ajax are still recovering from that and will be recovering from that, I suspect, for the next couple of years. So if you're looking at Dortmund bringing focus, bringing clarity to their recruitment, nothing that Mislintat did at Ajax suggests that that is likely to be coming. And, you know, when they've brought people back before, mainly players, obviously, so it's a slightly different cup of tea, it's not really worked, trying to go back and recapture the golden years, if you like. So, look, there are a lot of questions with Dortmund. One of the questions, and if we're looking for the first task, it's got to be about what you're doing with the coach. They've talked more recently about, you know, keeping Edin Terzic, because, of course, he's really valued and he's really liked. But if they're keeping him on the back of getting through a chaotic Champions League campaign with individual quality, that is not a good reason for keeping him. Everything that's been on the pitch, that is the coach's responsibility, and they've only really succeeded through individual quality and not through any sort of collective plan. That really needs to change. So in terms of recruitment, in terms of coaching, there's a lot that needs to evolve quickly at Borussia Dortmund, because you look at what Leverkusen have managed to do on what, like, a lot lesser budget than Dortmund's, and it says a lot for having all your ducks in a row.
And one more for you, Nicky, from Ivaldo. How have Sassuolo found themselves in the relegation zone? Do they have any chance of escape?
They still have a chance, definitely. It's a very, very tight race at the bottom of Serie A. Sassuolo are currently on 26 points in 19th place, but it's only 2 points to get out of the relegation zone, where Udinese are in 17th, and you can go all the way up to Cagliari in 14th on 32 points, probably still catchable. But there are a few teams that have started to pull themselves out of that relegation fight, have started to get results, and Sassuolo are not one of them. How have they found themselves there? I think some idealistic would be a charitable way of saying it, recruitment policies and squad planning policies, because this is a team that, as was pointed out by Capology.com earlier in the year, has the biggest gap between its spending on its attack and the rest of the team of any team in Serie A. If you talk about proportions rather than funding, they're spending about 20 million euros, their wage bill, on attackers, and 13 on wages for the entire rest of the team. Domenico Berardi on his own is about a quarter of that attacking wage bill. And he's now injured, by the way, although that's relatively recent. They were struggling before without him. You see it on the pitch. They are a brilliant team going forward. Certainly when Berardi was fit, Pinamonti was fit, Loriente as well. They've got some really interesting attacking talents. But defensively, they're a mess week after week. They've conceded 65 goals this season. I think only last place, Salernitana, have conceded more. they should have invested a bit more and planned a bit more for having some alternatives at the other end of the pitch. And I think it's almost that they are victims of happier days under the likes of De Zerbi, who made them into a team that was brilliantly attacking and fun to watch and could afford to concede lots of goals because they were so good going forward. They've kept to those ideals without perhaps performing at quite the same levels going forward, and finally never buying a defender, because they really haven't invested in signing defenders either, is starting to catch up with them.
I think that's a wrap. Thank you for listening to Ask OTC. If you would like to ask a question that you can contact us at any time with, then do get in touch at Radio Dawson, at Andy Brassel, at Nikki Bandini, or at OTC Pod. And you can email us, otc@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.